Hello and welcome to another episode of The Phone Booth. We are recording on March 23rd, just hours after Georgetown announced that it would be parting ways with head coach John Thompson III after 13 seasons. I am joined by a larger than normal group and a very special guest. To kick things off, we have our assistant podcast editor Nick Gavio.
Hello, everyone.
We have former voice editor-in-chief and current Ringer staffer, Chris Almeida.
What's up?
We have our halftime sports editor, Jorge Deneve.
Hey, everybody.
And we have staff writer and NBA enthusiast, halftime sports plug, Parker Houston.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Fellas, just a few hours ago, it was announced that John Thompson III and Georgetown were parting ways. There's been some speculation as to whether it was resignation or a firing. In a statement from the school, John DeGioia, president of the university, said, "It is with profound regret and deep appreciation that I informed John Thompson III this morning that the university will no longer be retaining his services as our men's basketball coach." He went on to say, "Our tradition of excellence as a university will forever be inextricably linked with John and his family." That doesn't give a lot of insight into whether he was fired or resigned. It leads me to believe that it was a firing. But Almeida, what do you think of this?
From what I've been seeing, most places are reporting that he was fired. ESPN has that, and CSN Mid-Atlantic also. I guess they're never going to let much leak out of the administration officially, but it sounds like he was fired, which is nuts.
Yeah, how do you think that changes? Does that change your perspective on the news at all? As opposed to, because I think when the season ended, my assumption had been, should he leave, it will be resignation, not a fire. I don't think I ever thought he would be fired. Does it change? Was anybody else expecting that kind of thing?
It almost seems as though he wanted to be the coach next year.
I think he was prepared to be the coach next season. Yeah. From what I've read online, he seemed to be pretty blindsided by this move. I don't want to say blindsided, but I think he was prepared to remain the coach for sure.
Yeah, I think it's also a little surprising that given that they decided to fire him, as it seems like it was, that it came this late, given mm-hmm. that most of the coaches that have already been fired have been picked up by other schools for the most part. So, I mean, getting him out earlier would have allowed them to search earlier.
Yeah, and I think what I probably was expecting was, of course, John Thompson is going to want to stay here, but maybe the university approaches him and says, you know, we want to make this change. At that point, you might just resign so that the team doesn't have to, or so that the school doesn't have to fire you. I don't know. I think it was kind of surprising to me that he ended up being fired, but of course, still a sad day.
It's interesting how the firing plays too with Big John's presence at the school. During the statement, they said that the team will always be inextricably linked to the Thompsons, and so it sounds as though they will try to keep John Thompson II around as a part of the program, as a big part of the program.
I mean, I think it's hard to just kick him to the curb now that JT3 is gone because they just opened the athletic center with his name on it.
That's going to be a tough decision. It's going to be a tough talk for them to have.
Yeah,
I think all of this is optics, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what their intent is really with that. Obviously, they need to keep him around just because of his alumni connections, because you have a gigantic building on campus with his name on the front of it.
A statue of him inside of it.
Right. Yep. I mean, whether or not, if you could part on good terms, I'm sure they would want that, but knowing that's not on the table, they have to say, we really respect everything that Big John's done for the program, and we hope that we can move forward, just so that you don't, by just merit of saying something silly in a statement, absolutely destroy the 45-year history of the program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, one thing is, though, it's also kind of a two-way street in that I saw a tweet from Jeff Goodman earlier today that he received a lot of calls from various agents and or college coaches about the potential Georgetown opening, and their first question is, how much influence does Big John have? Because if you're a coach, you don't want to come here just to get bullied around by him. You want to be able to make your own decisions, make decisions that you think are best for the program. And if he still has as big of an influence as he has had over the past few years, I don't know how that will affect the coaching search.
Especially with a slightly angry John Thompson II that we might see going forward.
Right. Mm. For sure. Just to put some numbers behind JT3's 13 years as head coach, he posted a record of 278-151, including 131-96 in the Big East. The team won three regular season Big East championships in 2006-2007, 2007-2008, and 2012-2013. They also won the 2007 Big East tournament championship, blowing out Pittsburgh in the final of that one. But since the reformulation of the Big East in the 2013-2014 season, the team has struggled in league play. They've only gone 32-40, which is fourth worst in the conference, behind ahead of only DePaul, St. John's, and Marquette. Marquette is 31-41, so a one-game edge on Marquette. And it's interesting because it seems like every year going into the Big East or in the Big East preseason coaches poll, the Hoyas have been picked in the top five, especially last year, this year as well. They've had the talent. They've had DSR, Devonta Smith-Rivera. They've had this year Rodney Pryor and LJ Peak, and just things never really came together in the new Big East. And sports is kind of a what have you done for me lately business. And two down seasons, and the fan base basically imploded. Twitter was going crazy basically every night after games. What do you guys make of the noise that was surrounding the programs in its final days? Obviously, it was getting very heated amongst fans, very passionate tweets and things. Do you think there's anything more to it than just raw emotion in the moment? Or
not necessarily. I think people are very passionate about the basketball team here. People are passionate about the team, and they want to hear news from it. So I think not hearing news from it just incites more passion.
Yeah,
I just want to know more.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I want to rephrase the question a little bit. It's just like, do you think, because one of our friends had mentioned that, you know, a lot of people will probably look back on how they acted in the last days of the of this Thompson era and be a little bit ashamed. Do you feel like do you think there was any overreaction or underreaction here?
So, like, I think that we, as, like, Georgetown students or, you know, parts of the press or people who have, you know, interacted with the athletics department, with JT3 personally before, we see that on a much more personal level than most people do, right? Like, when you call for, right, Chip Kelly's firing, do you ever look back and we're like, wow, I'm really ashamed of how I behaved when I was calling for Chip Kelly to be fired? No, because he's just, you know, a public figure, and you never really think twice about what you're doing to public figures, especially in something like sports where the stakes on a personal level aren't too high, right? Like, JT3 personally will be fine, financially will be fine. Like, you know, it's unfortunate that this is happening, and like, it probably doesn't feel great for him and his family right now, but, you know, in the end, like, there's no really, like, long lasting personal, like, scarring consequences of it, which is why I don't think most people will really regret anything, because they won't even think about it.
This just
happens, you know.
I do think that a lot of the response came in reaction to the way the university handled it. It's been, what, 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks
since the last game. That's altogether too late to fire your coach. And, you know, people were expecting him to go much, much earlier if he was going to go at all. And so waiting this long made it seem like, you know, nobody's voices were going to be heard and that he was just going to be kept for the next year. And so I understand a lot of, especially with, you know, the way that the university, the athletic department has acted, those, like, the little tweets and untweets about, you know, support for Thompson, the retweets of, like, random articles on accident. It just, everything in the program seemed like it was going towards Thompson staying, and so that made everyone even more angry.
And we had seen, there had been an email sent out to some students in the school, and also on Casual Hoyo, a student group had planned a protest in Red Square. It was scheduled for the day, March 24th, but obviously JT3 was fired the day before that. So obviously students had a lot of it, and I do agree with you, Parker. I feel like it had a lot to do with the administrative portion of things. But now you have a team without a coach, and you basically have 8 scholarship spots filled now that LJ Peak is going, has declared for the NBA draft, which we'll get to in a moment. But you have 8 scholarship spots filled. You have rumors of Trey Mourning trying to transfer. Also been noise about, you know, now the team doesn't have a coach, and their best recruit kind of in limbo. Nobody really knows what's happened with Tremont Waters.
Well, I think we can safely assume he's not going to be coming
here. No, we can assume, supposedly he requested this release from his national letter of intent a week and a half ago, and nothing. Heard nothing of it. Michael Porter Jr. of Washington requested it like 2 or 3 days ago and is already out of it.
Yeah, it's a very strange situation because like this shouldn't be taking this long. I don't know what the holdup is. I guess we can maybe hope that he's just waiting to see about the new coach, but I don't know.
Maybe we have like a LeBron situation where he's like directing the team. Yeah.
I'm also worried about without a new coach, it might take even longer because I'm sure their number one priority is finding a new coach over deciding on Tremont Waters.
I mean, I feel like you have to find a coach within the next week.
Yeah.
You can't go into April without knowing who your coach is. That's not going to work out well, especially when you have scholarship spots that aren't filled.
And you want to try and fill them.
Yeah.
You want to have your coach so that you know what are the type of players you're going to look for, who should we fill this with. So they definitely need it quick.
Not just that, and also it's like we're already at the end of the recruiting cycle. Like National Signing Day for basketball is a few weeks away, and there aren't many prospects still out there. So if you only have 8 scholarship players, you need to hit the transfer market and the graduate transfer market. Mm-hmm. And transfer, like if you get a transfer that hasn't graduated already, they won't even be able to play next year.
Yeah.
So just, you know, extending this out longer than it needs to be is really just screwing the team over for next year because you just can't get players to fill the spots.
Georgetown only has 1 recruit committed thus far, and it seemed like when when Antoine Walker was talking about going to Georgetown, a lot of it was contingent on Tremont Waters. So we'll see, I guess, because there's not a lot of guys out there that we can pick up.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot out of Antoine Walker since the whole Tremont Waters thing. No, I mean, as of now, I think he's still committed, but
thus far,
it's just a weird situation.
Yeah, absolutely, and I brought it up earlier, but I kind of want to expand upon it now. LJ Peak, essentially, I think some would say he was the best player on the team this year. You could interchange him with Rodney, both of them really providing the team with a lot of production this year. LJ, in his junior season, averaged 16.5 points per game, 3.5 assists per game, and just 4 rebounds per game. Has declared for the NBA draft. Jeff Goodman of ESPN reports that he also intends to sign an agent. Should Peak sign an agent, he will be unable to come back to college. Of course, he can always test the waters without an agent, and if he doesn't like his prospects, come back for a senior season. But as of the latest NBA Draft Express or DraftExpress.com mock draft, he will be is slated to go 50th overall to the Denver Nuggets. What do you guys think in terms of LJ's decision and also perhaps his NBA prospects?
Well, I don't blame him for leaving. I think that it would have been good for him to come back because regardless of the situation here, he would have been the focal point. Yeah. Right? That's a good opportunity to just take the entire year, shoot the ball a lot, impress scouts, score a lot of points, put up some gaudy numbers, right? The last two times that Georgetown players declared and then came back, the situation was a little bit different. You know, you had Roy Hibbert doing it after the Final Four season, and he came back to a team that was a top 10 team, and then you had DSR do it after the 2015 season, where obviously the team made the tournament and like did pretty well during the year. Now, I mean, if he's doing this, like, I really don't think that he's going to change his mind. Like, I mean, if he ever had the idea that it would be better to get out of here, it's like, I mean, he's not going to change his mind.
Now is the time to get out of here, right?
Yeah, and I mean, if he's thinking about signing an agent, how much do you think the DSR situation is in the back of his head? Like, he saw DSR declare, try and come back, and that didn't work out for him. Do you think he's thinking about that when he's talking about signing an agent?
Well, yeah. DSR also came back to, like, a much better team. The team he would be coming back to is depleted. There's no Rodney Pryor. There's no Bradley Hayes. There's no coach. Like, I feel like LJ probably, whether he knew or not, I think this definitely cements it. There's no reason to stay, play 1 year under a new coach when you've just played 3. And I don't know how much his draft stock can honestly go up. He played very well this season, and this might be a deeper draft pool than normal,
yeah.
But I still think he definitely has a spot in the mid to late second round.
Next year's draft is even deeper than this year. So
anyway, like even with like draft depth, I'm like not sure how far that filters down. Yeah, like at the 50th pick, like I feel like you know.
I mean, well, I did see that someone reported, I forget who it was, that LJ was going to declare even before the season started. That's what his mind was set on. And obviously, you know, the whole situation this season, I don't know, it might help, it might not help. You know, he could come back, be the focal point, put up good numbers. But also, you know, if that's what he wanted to do early in the season, I don't know how much of an effect the current situation had on that. And, I mean, I guess the other thing is, if you get a coach that comes in that runs a system other than the Princeton, maybe his numbers could get a lot better, where his skills could actually be taken advantage of better. He could get going to the basket and get better looks in a more free-flowing offense that would better tailor to his skills.
We gotta remember, too, though, when we're talking about this, that going to the NBA is a life decision, first and foremost, and LJ is a kid, and so it makes sense for him to want that money, and probably for the betterment of his family, he probably should do that.
And even if, you know, even if you don't get drafted or whatever, like, you can go overseas, you can make, you know, good six-figure numbers playing for a team in Italy or playing for a team in Australia or whatever, so, like...
He'll definitely find a place in the pro ranks, but, so 10 years to the day after Jeff Green hits the game-winning shot over Vanderbilt in the 2007 Sweet 16, Georgetown is now without a head coach. So March 23rd, 2017, the Thompson era, I don't want to say officially closes because he'll still be, JT2 will still be an influence, but will no longer be sitting in the head coach's chair.
Looking forward to JT4.
Yeah, couple years. Yep. Just hire an interim head coach.
Yeah.
Get JT4 back in a little while. All right, well, thank you all for joining me today. Where can people follow you guys on social media? We'll start with you, Nick.
You can follow me at Nick Gavio on Twitter.
Don't follow me on social media.
Not yet.
Jorge's Twitterless. You can follow me at Tyler_Perry, PERRRE.
All right. I gave up Twitter for Lent, but follow me at Parker W. Houston. I decided a change needed to be made in my Twitter handle. So,
admirable. Giving up Twitter for Lent. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for joining me, and I'm sure we'll be back to discuss once Georgetown has decided who their new head coach will be. Thank you all.
Nick and I are now joined by Bobby Bancroft, veteran of the booth, a casual Hoya contributor and AP freelancer. Bobby's covered, followed the team since the days of Alonzo Mourning. Bobby, to start things off, I know you weren't on Twitter when the news broke, but what's your immediate reaction to today's news?
Well, I'm pretty shocked. I thought that we had made it far enough to where he was going to stay. I've always maintained that, you know, he worked so well, not to focus on any sort of thing, one thing in particular, but it's like his dad fought so hard to upgrade the facilities. He came in from day one, wanted to upgrade the facilities. He did a very good job basically recruiting with, you know, a big disadvantage. He finally gets the facilities and he's gone after not even a year. I know Georgetown's in a bad place right now, but I was really surprised. I could see if this was a big state school, you know, maybe like Ohio State or someplace like that, but I thought he could weather the storm at least another year on the hilltop.
I had read a report somewhere today that there was no plan to get rid of him within the first year of the Thompson Center opening, so I agree with you. I think it's very strange, considering that now that there's a basically a level playing field in the recruiting sphere, that he's not going to have a chance to use that to his advantage, especially with the amount of scholarship spots that are going to be open next year. We'll get to that later, but I would definitely tend to agree with you there. But the timing of this is 2 weeks and a day after the season ends. Strange time to fire your coach, for sure. How is this timing of this decision going to affect the team moving forward?
Well, what you have to hope, and I don't know how strongly I think, how confident I am in Georgetown in doing this, is I think in any sort of, whether whether you're leaving a job, whether you're leaving a relationship, whatever, the idea that it's always going to be better is what people seem to focus on. And if they haven't already been, you know, always having like a list, you know, they always say you guys are in college. You want to always sort of update your resume because you never know when something might happen. So they should, the athletic director, and I know that it's supposed to be Lee Reed and Paul Tagliabue in charge of the search. I would hope that they always have a list of here's our five guys. Because as we know, Kevin Keats of UNCW has been this name that everyone's sort of fallen in love with recently. And, you know, for good reason, he's already off the table. Then they got a chance to get him, you know. So I don't really understand. So I'd hope that there's been a plan in place, whether coach was going to quit after the Big East tournament or whether they decided to fire him 2 weeks after that. I just think the timing is crazy. And I wonder how many factors play into it. It's a long term decision. You know, how much does Tremont Waters backing out? How much does LJ Peak leaving? How much do these things contribute to what's going on? I would hope not that much, because it's a much bigger decision than 1 year.
Yeah, that's what I think is probably the biggest surprise here, is that, you know, you have 2 weeks where the coaching carousel was in effect. It was going on. Guys were, you know, switching places. Guys were getting fired. And Georgetown was just kind of silent. There wasn't any kind of, you know, official statement, any kind of rumblings, and there's just...
Which is par for the course for them.
Yeah, it's true.
And there's nothing new there.
So yeah. it's like, you know, it's really hard to read what's going on, because they've decided to be this program that doesn't really talk.
No, that's absolutely right. The silence was deafening in those 2 weeks. We heard reports that some students had planned a protest that was supposed to happen on March 24th. We're recording on March 23rd, so obviously that protest will no longer happen now that a decision has been made.
Hey, to jump in on that, what's your opinion on that?
I don't look at it very fondly. Yeah. I think it's almost like people are taking two bad basketball seasons as some sort of personal slight. And like, I guess you can make the argument, oh, the students are paying his salary, but I don't think it's worth protesting over. Basketball is a game. Two bad seasons aren't like out of the ordinary, and I think
totally agree.
Yeah,
totally
no, agree. If you're going to be mad about anything, be mad about the administrative side of things, not the basketball side of things. John Thompson III got you to 11 straight postseasons from basically 2007 to 2012. Georgetown had 20 wins from 2005 all the way through 2012, except for the 2008-2009 season. They were in postseason play that entire, like, it's not like it was.
No, even up through 2013.
Yeah. The protest, I have a lot of thoughts. I'll just leave it at that. What do you think?
I think a protest, you know, and I was telling people, you know, okay, this is a guy that everything's been good. You know, the kids have been good. There's been no scandals. There's been no off the court scandals.
That's
like,
huge.
You know what I mean? Like, there's real things in college sports to protest. Like, maybe you're at Baylor or you're, you know, I don't know, UNC had, like, the whole academic thing was, you know, Syracuse is always on probation. Like, there's places where I could see, you know what, you're embarrassing me. Going 14-18 is not embarrassing the university in any way. It just seems really ridiculous to me, the idea of protesting.
Totally agree.
Yeah, totally agree. If they had to do it, I'm glad they did it before this protest happened, because
me too.
I don't think Coach Thompson deserves to see that. Yeah, and as a student, Nick and I think we both agree, it would have just been embarrassing, because that probably would have picked up a lot of media attention, and, you know, then you go on the slippery slope of Georgetown, all Georgetown students protest, and yeah. I'm glad it is not happening. Yeah, that's where I'll leave that.
How much do you think the increased media scrutiny, basically starting with Goodman's article with unnamed former players, how much do you think that had a place in this? I know that there's been a lot of arguing over at Casual Hoya, where I do a lot of writing, that, you know, that website's become completely negative towards Thompson, and that sort of got this whole thing rolling. I don't know how it feels on campus. Obviously, I'm only there for the media availabilities. I sort of feel like it probably had something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that ESPN article gave it more of a national, I guess, spectacle, if you want to call it that. Like, you know,
yeah, attention.
Attention. Like, once you get that national attention, I mean, I definitely think more kids were very cognizant of the issue after that whole article and that whole, you know, saga kind of played out. I don't know. Do you agree with
that? Another thing is both The Voice and the Hoya had published editorials calling, you know, for him to be removed either by resignation or by firing. And people on Hoya Talk Casual wrote a piece about it. People latched onto that. So now not only do you have Goodman reporting that former players are, you know, anonymously calling for him to be fired, but now you have the students. I think it's really hard as an administration, even if you think for basketball reasons he shouldn't be fired. Two bad seasons isn't so bad that it's worthy of firing considering the whole body of work. But once you have the national attention and you have both student newspapers calling for your firing, it's difficult to combat that. And I think the crusade, I don't want to call it a crusade, but Casual was very negative towards it. There was one article Casual did that I thought was brilliant that considered the pros and cons of staying him. And other than that, most of them I felt were on one side of the spectrum, more so the negative side. I definitely think it played a major role between Casual and the student newspapers and, you know, Goodman. And then the radio show the other day. Who was it? I can't
even remember. Is it like 106.7 or something like that?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the former players, but not
a... No. So do you think... So I think I... So... I, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, on, you know, I got nothing going on watching sports at night. I got the NBA League Pass. I've got my tweet deck up, and the Hoyas thing comes up, and there's this guy that follows me. I don't follow him. And then so I tweeted above it, and I said, check out the 42nd minute of this. Then all of a sudden, it's like, boom, 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 you know, Casual writes about it, like, hey, who wants to write about this? It was Reggie Williams and Michael Graham, two guys that were on the 84 National Championship team. And they're basically just like, this is bad. This is embarrassing. We got to go. And it's like, wow, because all the stuff that, you know, after the Goodman article, all you heard was, you know, from, you know, Greg Monroe, Austin Freeman, Chris Wright, Devontae, who just tweeted a second ago. You just saw, or I guess someone retweeted it. He tweeted it 3 hours ago. After that, it's sort of been like, you know, Iverson spoke, which I thought it was weird that he went to the Big East tournament.
That was strange.
I almost thought it was like, did someone make a call and say, hey, it'd be super cool if you came here, if you're in the area? Because as someone that was a huge fan when they had Iverson, I've always thought like they don't use that recruiting tool enough, just like, you know, sort of like dangle him out there like, hey, look, I know that you think we have no guards. Guess what? Here's a Hall of Famer. You know, check this out. So I thought that was awfully interesting timing, very coincidental perhaps. So everything had been positive, and then you got these two guys doing it. And I've spoken with Reggie Williams on the phone before. I did a when I was writing the programs for Georgetown a couple years ago. I did something on the 30th anniversary of the I guess it would have been, what's my math? I don't know. Maybe 30. Yeah, I guess the 30 years of the national championship. And super nice guy. I was very surprised to hear him say that on what looked like some sort of like Christian show. I don't know if you guys watched it. It was not that great. It was not very entertaining outside of the Georgetown talk.
Yeah, no. The media firestorm, I would agree with you. I think it played a major role. And I think that's part of the reason why it took so long. The more the media kind of avalanched, it started with this snowball of a couple people. Like, there was always the angry people on Twitter after every game demanding his head.
Being upset that we're not asking difficult enough questions, you know, like, you know, like these people expect, like, you know, okay, you just lost to Xavier at home. Everyone wants the first question to be like, are you going to quit?
Yeah,
like that's not how this works, actually.
Not at all. Some of them could step in the press room. I'd love to see how they fare. It's just like some. I don't want to get into that. That's a whole other conversation. But you bring up a valid point. But no, I do think the media avalanche had something to do with the timeline. obviously a lot of reports came out right after the St. John's loss. Not reports, but articles came out after the St. John's loss discussing the future prospects. And just the more and more it piled on, I think the administration basically had no other choice. So Georgetown is now without a coach. It needs to fill that vacancy. And we've heard quite a few names be thrown around out there. One of the first names to pop up, and interestingly enough, Wikipedia seems to think he will be our next head coach. Tommy Amaker, current Harvard head coach, has been one of the most popular names. There's also been speculation of Dan Hurley from Rhode Island, Shaka Smart from Texas, and Patrick Ewing, obviously a Hoya legend and current Charlotte Hornets associate head coach. What have you been hearing, Bobby, in terms of these vacancies, and what do you make of it?
Well, the first name that we've all been hearing, I think, and everyone has their own little sources here and there, is Tommy Amaker, which I do not understand at all, like on any level. Well, that's not true. I get it. It's very like vanilla, status quo. It's, you're basically, in my opinion, hiring. I mean, he's the same age as Coach Thompson III. You know, he's from the area. He's been a head coach at two major programs, and in my mind, if he had the record at Seton Hall in Michigan that he had at Georgetown, there'd be another protest. So I don't understand the logic train in that at all, unless you're going for a guy that you say, look, last time we grabbed our coach from the Ivy League, we think we are an Ivy League light school. This is a safe hire. I don't get that one at all. I don't see it.
I totally agree with you on that. I kind of saw this news and thought, you know, this is pretty much the status quo. And one thing I would add is that at Harvard, he had that scandalish thing with recruiting violations, which, you know, you don't really want to see in a future a head coach.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Going from somebody who led the program without a scandal for 13 years to somebody who comes in with a little bit of that baggage isn't ideal, but I agree. There's a problem with Amaker, I see, and it's that you can get the same criticisms that you had of John Thompson III. You just get an Ivy League guy and throw him into a major power conference. Granted, JT3 didn't have any experience in like the major conferences as a head coach like Tommy Amaker does, but like you said, Bobby, he hasn't done anything when he's been at a major program like that. And
if my options are, and you know, this is where I think a lot of people, and I've had email discussions with different people, and you know, some people are so focused, and I would assume the university doesn't have this position, but some people have just decided that anything is better than John Thompson III, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, some of the takes I've seen on Twitter today are crazy. Like, I saw one tweet today. Somebody tweeted, JT3 fired 8 years too late. I guess they forgot the year Otto Porter happened. Like, it's just – people just completely lose sight of what happened now that he's gone.
They were a 4 seed 2 years ago. How about that?
They sports are what have you done for me lately business, and I guess two straight losing seasons is enough for some people to forget 11 straight postseason runs. But some of
you know,
the other
so coaches. Amaker. So if you're asking me my opinion on these guys, Amaker, not on board with that at all. I would happily be proven wrong if he does get hired, but I think that's just not the way to go. Hurley, if I'm ranking them, I've got Hurley ahead of Amaker. Still, I just feel like Rhode Island's been underperforming recently. You know, where does that sound familiar? Patrick Ewing Jr., that's based – or I'm sorry, Patrick Ewing Sr., you know, that is just – I have a hard time with that. I mean, St. John's, we haven't really seen. The thing you forget, he's been in the NBA basically almost his whole life at this point as a player and as an assistant. And I'm not saying being an assistant is an easy job. I'm sure it's very difficult. There's a different NBA life. He doesn't have to recruit. Like, this guy has not spent a second, you know, you spend all of July around the country recruiting at these AAU events. And then, you know, people forget, you know, Georgetown plays a home game against Creighton. You know, JT3 gets up in the morning and flies somewhere to see some high school kid. You know, then he's back the next day. We have our media available. You know what I mean? Like, it's there's a lot going on there. Is that the life that an NBA millionaire, you think, wants to have? I'm not convinced about that. We've seen it with Chris Mullen. What have they done? They haven't done well. I know, you know, it's not exactly apples to apples there, but, I mean, what is going on with that? For me, Shaka Smart, if there's any way you can convince Shaka Smart to come here, that would – I don't know what he makes at Texas. I know if Georgetown continues to pay as much as they're paying, you know, you have a new building. He was down in Richmond, which you could maybe even – I don't know. By today's standards, is that considered part of the DMV? I don't know. It's not that far, you know. And he's young. He's energetic. I think one of the biggest problems with Thompson's teams is that the team takes on the personality of the man in charge. In college basketball, it's the coach because the players come and go. He's not as, you know, fiery on the sideline. I think Shaka Smart comes here. If he did, in a year or two, you'd have everyone writing these columns, something to the tune of, even though his son coached here, these are more like, you know, John Thompson Jr.'s Hoyas than ever before, because they play that kind of, you know, intense defense, the pressure, you know, what do they call it? Havoc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that, yeah, that, they call it. I remember that.
That to me would be your hire. He's young. He's energetic. I just don't. That's why the whole Amaker thing scares me. Of you're hiring a guy the same age that's already been in the big time and has not proven anything.
No, I would tend to agree with you. I think of the people that have been named as possible candidates, I think Shaka Smart is about as good as it gets. Like, for all the reasons you said, he brings basically a new brand of basketball to Georgetown, the Havoc. You know, I don't want to compare the Havoc to the press we saw Georgetown run this season, but the few times they pressed, they found a little bit of success, and I think since they haven't been recruiting players suited for the Princeton offense, some of these guys are perfect for that kind of system that Shaka Smart would bring. We've also heard conflicting reports as to how much a buyout would be for Shaka Smart's contract, but I would have to agree with you. If you have the money, or you have to dip a little bit more into your pocketbook, I think if you're going to dip into it for anybody, Shaka Smart is your guy. Another
absolutely
name
is, and I think that you can sell him on you're at a football school.
Yeah,
I mean, Rick Barnes made the tournament. Rick Barnes was like, he made the tournament, I think 16 of his 17 years there. They got rid of him. It wasn't good enough. I mean, it's all football at Texas. It's like, you come here, you're in a basketball only conference. You know, Georgetown is supposed to be, as we know, the headliner. They announced the conference was forming after a Georgetown game in the press room. I mean, this is you can't get any more basketball centric than this. And oh, by the way, now you actually have the facilities to recruit.
And you have one of the best recruiting areas in the nation.
Exactly.
I saw some graphic the other day that percentage-wise, like the amount of basketball players in each state, percentage-wise, the most amount of D1 recruits come out of Maryland, just like proportionally. Yeah.
And Virginia was like number three.
And Virginia was like four or five. Yeah, somewhere in the top five, too. You have everything you need now. You have a brand-new $65 million building. You have four scholarship spots open, and a hotbed of talent right there. And I don't think it'd be too hard to sell a recruit on that. Yeah. What do you have?
No, you can fix college basketball real quick with recruiting, and it takes literally one class. It's not, you know, everyone's, you know, I know we're freaking out about the roster and this and that. And, you know, at the same time, this is the roster that got a coach fired. So how upset can you be when the roster starts dwindling? You know, that's not to say that I don't think there's good players on the team. There absolutely are. But at the same time, you're going to go through some roster turnover because the roster didn't get it done for whatever reason.
Yeah, for sure. One other thing I want to bring up quick is that Jeff Goodman, I know we have some feelings about him here, but he reported earlier today that he got a couple calls from college coaches who might have interest in Georgetown. But some of them are afraid of potentially being overshadowed by John Thompson Jr. and, you know, his big effect on the program, and maybe not being able to do, you know, make the moves that they want to make. Do you think that you know, what kind of involvement of John Thompson Jr. do you think could scare off potential candidates?
No, you know, and I was definitely going to bring that up at some point before we got done here tonight, is that, yeah, for me, and I'm writing something for Casual about this, the two biggest things for this job as far as getting a big name or, you know, a solid name is, are they going to continue to pay at this very competitive rate? And what's Big John's involvement going to be? Now, I mean, the fact that they just got rid of his kid, to me, means he's clearly not running the show, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine that. It's hard to imagine that he came to the conclusion that he thought the basketball team should get a new coach. So he's definitely, you know, there is people in place that are making those decisions. But yeah, I mean. And it'll be interesting. I mean, for years he had a radio show here, and he's very outspoken. He's been very outspoken his whole public life, and he's basically just part. You know, he comes with the furniture, as he rightly should. But exactly how much is that going to hang over a coach? And I think that might deter some people. And I think he's probably going to any coach worth anything is going to probably want to meet with him before taking the job. You know, I know that Lee Reed and Paul Tagliabue are supposed to be in charge of the search, but I can't imagine a coach taking the job and not sitting down and having a conversation with a basketball Hall of Famer who you're going to be spending all of your time in a building named after him.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I'm glad Nick brought that up and you guys talked about that, because I don't think it's not entirely clear what John Thompson Jr.'s role is now. He had his courtside seat at every single game right next to the bench while his son was coaching.
He also went into the locker room.
He would go into locker rooms. He'd, you know, walk around the press area. He was just as much a part of the game day as anybody else on staff. And now that they have a building named after him, now his son's not the coach. Nobody really knows what to expect going forward.
And that's sort of like the unique thing about this is there's really no coaching tree from John Thompson Jr. You know, there's these other programs that you can point to Duke, and there's all these guys out there. I mean, we're talking about one tonight in Amaker.
And her,
you know,
he played there.
No, this is the Hurley that played Seton Hall.
Oh, okay. My bad.
That's okay. He played at Seton Hall. His brother played at Duke, was the better Hurley. But so there's no actual, you know, I mean, look, VCU has been a good program for a long time, but they've only been like, you know, national for like, you know, 5 minutes, it seems like.
Yeah.
And they've already been through a whole coaching tree at VCU. Like, they just keep going down the line. And, you know, someone we didn't even talk about who I would find more interesting than Tommy Amaker is the guy at Mount St. Mary's, who is another.
Oh, what is his name? He's like 34 years old. Jamie and Christian.
You know, so I mean, it's crazy. VCU has a better coaching tree than Georgetown does. I mean, you know, John Thompson III actually has a little bit of one. They got the, you know, Mike Brennan at American. Sidney Johnson went to Princeton. Now he's at Fairfield. You know, he's had some assistants move on, but under Big Coach, it was basically Eschrick and Mike Riley, and they were there forever, and they never went anywhere, and they never had, you know, time to branch out and come back. So, There's no one to turn to, and I think that's another thing. You know, the speculation with Amaker, as I'm sure you guys have heard, is they share the same agent, David Falk, yeah. Agent mm-hmm. to the Georgetown mm-hmm. Stars, which is, that's sort of, for me, you know, I think if you make this decision to go away from John Thompson III, I think you need to make a little bit of a decision, just go away from the whole thing and get the program energized. And I don't think Amaker would do that. I think Ewing, even though he's probably the greatest player at Georgetown, you can argue Sleepy Floyd and some other guys here or there, I'm not sure the people that really wanted JT3 out, and I wasn't one of them, I'm not sure bringing Patrick Ewing in makes them happy.
I've also heard that Patrick Ewing would be reluctant to take the job, considering how his relationship with the Thompsons, you know, the whole idea of stepping in for JT3 after he was fired, just that kind of weird dynamic, if that makes any sense.
It does, of course.
Yeah, no, I read something today that he might be reluctant to do that. But we'll see. The coaching carousel will make its rounds 2 weeks later than it normally does. But you know, for the second time in 40 plus years, 45 years, I believe, Thompson will not be the head coach of the Georgetown men's basketball team. Bobby, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. As always, your input is appreciated, and whenever we hear about a new coach, we'll have to reconvene and get your expert analysis again.
I hope that they make a bold decision. The only reason this program is something that's a national name is because they made a bold decision to go with a high school coach. I'm not suggesting that they go with a high school coach, but I think, you know, they hired a high school coach. Then they didn't really have a search committee. He quit middle of the season, hired his assistant. Then for whatever coaching committee they had, searching committee, they hired his son. Okay. So this is the first time since 72 that they have an opportunity to be bold and do something different. And I really hope that is what happens. Now that they've made this decision, because I'll be honest, and I think I've said it enough times, this is not something that I was backing. I did not back getting rid of John Thompson III this fast.
I would agree with you on that. If you could fit everything that you just said into 140 characters, I would definitely hit you with a retweet, Bobby. speaking of Twitter, where can people follow you at and find some of your work?
Just at Bobby Bancroft, just my name, nothing fancy. I've got my elementary school mascot as my avatar, which I've been told I really need to change, but I haven't been able to do it yet.
I'm glad you said that. I was trying to figure out what it was.
It is a Kings Glen Gator.
I thought it was some weird Florida Gator adaptation you had come up with, but it's good to know that you're a Gator at yes. heart, Bobby.
And then I'm gonna be having some stuff on casual at some point today. Life gets in the way sometimes, you know. And I think it's important, if you want Georgetown to hire a head coach, you just tell me what day to leave my phone at home, okay? And I leave my phone at home. Tremont Waters wants out. I leave my phone for a little bit. LJ Pete goes pro. I leave my phone for a couple hours. John Thompson III gets released of his duties. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Glad you mentioned LJ. Real quickly before you go, your thoughts on him going to the NBA, his prospects?
I think that it's – I don't know about his NBA prospects. I think it'd be great for the program if he made it. His athleticism is there. I wish him the best. He's a great natural scorer. His shot improved while he was here. I still worry a little bit about his decision-making. Even at the end, he was finding himself committing needless fouls that really hurt the team, as – he needed to be on the court 38 minutes a night, and I wish he had been able to understand that a little bit more and not be so risky. I think that he will definitely be in the D League next year if that's where he wants to be. I think he has a chance to make the NBA, maybe get drafted late, but I think he's probably going to make a bulk of his money and a lot of it playing in leagues abroad.
All right, well, thank you again, Bobby. Everybody make sure to stay tuned on Casual Hoya. Bobby will be coming out with a lot of pieces, as he just mentioned. So thank you again, Bobby. We'll be sure to get you on once the decision has been made.
Thanks, Bobby.
I hope it's soon.
Leave your phone at home on Monday, please.
I'll do it.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, Bobby.
Sure.